Meaning of the new year, and so I'm very pleased to have a quorum here. So that means we can conduct official business in year four. And so I would like the Spanish interpreters to speak at this time, so you all of us understand how this little process works. So go ahead. Thank you.
Hi, good morning. Buenos dias. My name is Nico, and this is Jessica and Clemencia. We'll be the interpreters in Spanish. We just wanted to remind everyone to please speak slowly, and if you speak too fast, we're going to make this sign so you can slow down. If you're speaking too loud, we'll go like this so you can speak up. And please just be mindful so we can get the correct interpretation so that the meeting will be fluid for everyone. And of course, when Ms. Maria speaks, we'll be going into consecutive, so she'll speak and then we'll interpret. And I'll say that really quickly in Spanish too, so that entonces, buenos días, vamos a hacer los intérpretes. Si la gente está hablando muy rápido, vamos a hacer así para que hablen más despacito. Y si están hablando muy despacito, vamos a pedirle que suban la voz así, ¿no? Y que por favor que todos participen para que eso sea un espacio para que todos puedan participar.
So you said if I'm speaking too loud, you'll go like this?
Speaking too low.
Got it. Just to make sure. This one checking.
So, Ms. Maria, would you want part of the family? Thank you. So let me quickly go around the room. I know a lot of you don't know each other, so let's do quick introductions so people know where people are from in terms of the role that you serve on the SRC. So Matt McCoy, and I'm the current SRC chair.
Maria Barrera, representante de la comunidad latina en cliente.
Maria Barrera, representative of the Latino community and a client.
Alicia Johns, program manager for the assistive technology program for the District of Columbia.
I'm Dr. Wayne Curtis, managing partner of my own company, and I'm here representing the business community. I guess I'm the second vice chair, right?
Yes, second.
Andy Reese, I'm the deputy director for Department on Disability Services, responsible for the Rehabilitation Services Administration.
I'm one of the sign language interpreters. My name is Corey.
Chris Early, Christopher Early, representing the business community with Capital One. First meeting, welcome. I'm glad to be here. Finally was able to get to a meeting today, so Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
Welcome.
I'm set up so you guys can see me on the side. I'm Jasmine Taylor from Advocates for Justice and Education, the Director of Parent and Youth Engagement.
Good morning. I'm Ziyabash Hiriati, and I am working for RSA.
My name is Pamela Carricker, and I'm at the DC Center for Independent Living and Growth for Consumers with Disabilities.
I am Jonathan Lucas. I'm the director at the ARC of the United States, and I also help oversee the local chapter of the ARC of DC.
Good morning. I'm Maggie Cowley. I'm the client assistance program attorney for the District of Columbia.
I'm Cheryl Veal, a parent of a disabled young adult who's receiving services here.
Good morning. Marlene Jones-Kinney. I'm a supervisor of RSA's Office of Quality Assurance and Compliance.
Good morning. I'm Romeo Ivala, the Operations Program Manager for RSA.
Good morning. I'm
Nancy
Rodriguez. I'm a model of the Developers for Spanish.
My name is Jessica
Reno.
I'm one of the Spanish interpreters. My name is Gloria
Curado.
I'm the technician.
Thank you. Appreciate it. So at this time, I'm going to hand it over to Andy Reese for his report. The ABC was extremely busy at the end of the year to make final reports and stuff like that. And I also drafted a report on behalf of the SOC in terms of our relationship with the agency, and so Andy can talk more about that as well.
Good morning. So as Matt said, we've had a very busy end of the year, not only with finalizing all of our annual reports that need to go in, but also working very hard, lots of hours, along with other workforce development agencies on developing the unified state plan. I'm going to talk some today about the VR program portion of that plan and the goals and priorities that we established in some meetings with folks from the SRC who were able to join us in that planning. And I'll also give you an overview of sort of the next steps for the unified plan. The unified plan is due to the Departments of Education and Labor by March the 3rd. And backing up from that, there needs to be a 30-day public comment period. The plan needs to be transmitted from the WIC to the mayor and submitted from the mayor to the Secretary of Labor and Education by March 3rd. We have next week a meeting with the mayor to review the plan with her, and then the plan will be published, the expectation is, the following week, and then over those next 30 days, there will be a series of public meetings. And as soon as we get that schedule, I will send it out to everyone. One of the things that I think is very important is that the interests of people with disabilities be represented at each of those meetings. They talked about having a special meeting, you know, that we coordinate a special meeting, which is fine, but I want to make sure that at any meeting where there's any discussion of any aspect of the plan, that the interests of people with disabilities are represented. So we'll send out the schedule for all of those meetings to make sure that we can have some representation there. The whole point, from our perspective, of the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act is integration of services and ensuring better coordination and serving people with most significant barriers, which includes people with disabilities, and, you know, creating a pathway for people with disabilities to get into the workforce. And so ensuring that we're not just talking here about improving VR services at RSA, we're talking about fully integrating people with disabilities into all services in the workforce development system. I've heard a great deal from particularly OSSE about work that they've done to be more inclusive, to ensure that there's accessibility for people who are blind or visually impaired. I want to make sure that those people don't just come to any hearing that's specifically related to the VR plan, but that they go to all the meetings so that I'm not the one turning around and saying to OSSE, well, that's not what I'm hearing. And so I think it's helpful that each of our agencies hear it directly from the community. So as I said, as soon as that schedule of public meetings is published, we will get that out to everyone. The full VR program plan will be part of the full unified plan, which, as I said, will be published on the 25th, and we will also, as soon as the whole unified plan is available, we'll also publish it on DDS's website. The other thing we're going, yeah.
Can we get a copy beforehand, or do you want to wait until it's published?
I can send it out. Yeah, I was actually just going to say, we are going to have by early next week a Google Docs site up so that everyone here can have access to a number of documents, and included in there will be the VR portion of the plan. And so you'll have the full 68 pages of our plan.
Be careful what you wish for.
I know.
Along with a number of reports that Marlene's going to describe today, but we'll make those reports available on the Google Docs site. Included in those that she'll be describing is the 9/11 report, which has 200 and some columns. 215 different factors that it's reporting on. And so we'll publish that report along with the guidebook so that you understand what every column means.
Do you have to invite us to be?
We will invite the whole SRC.
Are we allowed to make changes or recommend changes, or is it final at this point?
At this point, the comments that you would make would be, because I've already submitted it to, the comments you would make would be comments on the actual plan, and so those changes then can be made, but they should be made, the recommendations should be made as part of the public comment period. So just to update people sort of briefly, I've talked some, as I said, we've been working quite a bit on the state plan. I've been going to two or three meetings a week with representatives from the Office of the State Superintendent for Education, Department of Employment Services, Department of Human Services. You may notice that I am now referring to our unified state plan, not our combined state plan. After some consideration, the decision of the mayor was that this would be a unified plan, which means that the plan would be plans just from the required partners regarding the six programs that fall under the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, which are under Title I, which is the workforce programs for adult and dislocated workers and youth, Title II through the Office of the State Superintendent for Adult Education, Title III, which is Wagner-Pizer, also through the Department of Employment Services, and Title IV, the VR plan. There was some consideration of including additional agencies in a combined plan, but at this time, the decision of the city was to start out with a unified plan and perhaps move for our next four-year plan to a combined plan, given how much work we're doing to finalize a unified plan. A combined plan seemed like too much of an undertaking. Also, the federal government has not been clear to the extent when a state submits a combined plan, what kinds of requirements will be imposed on those additional agencies. And so, you know, we're going to wait until they finalize regulations and are clear about the process before we take on more than is required.
I'm sorry to be too dense here. So when I hear unified and combined, it's hard for me to separate them in terms of definitionally. So could you make the distinction for me?
Yes. Unified is every state is required to submit a unified plan, which is a plan for the unified workforce development system, okay, which includes the six programs under the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. In addition, and don't ask me to name them, there are 11 additional programs that a state could include in a combined plan. We will make reference in our plan to how we work with agencies outside the unified plan, but those agencies are not part of the unified plan. Their funding won't be tied to the unified plan, et cetera.
But in the future, we may do a combined plan that includes all of them.
That adds some of them.
Got it. Okay.
Some of them exist in the district.
Oh, fair enough. That's
one is a second chance program. And while the district has services for returning citizens, we don't currently have a second chance program funded by the federal government. So,
thanks.
What agencies was the city considering including on a combined plan this time?
Department of Human Services. And there's the block grant funds as well as TANF, because TANF is a required partner in the One Stop, and there is tremendous focus in the city on employment for people who currently receive TANF, because as people may know, the city has finally imposed the time limits on TANF that were part of welfare reform in 1997. And so there are currently approximately 7,000 families who next fall will hit those time limits. And the time limits in the district are frankly a state can choose when it imposes time limits to continue itself to pay a portion of the grant, but the federal government won't. And in some states, the state continues the child portion of the grant but they penalize for the parent portion of the grant. The district will be terminating the full grant. So we're talking about a significant impact next fall. And so it really, you know, there is significant focus on how to move all of the heads of those households, of those 7,000 families, toward employment. I don't know off the top of my head, but the percentage of people who are 24 and under who are included in that population is also a pretty significant percentage. And so there'll be a lot of focus on not only coordination with workforce, but coordination in terms of youth services. Because as we've heard recently, not only in the TANF population, but also in the homeless population, in terms of homeless families, what we see is an overrepresentation of youth 24 and under, youth-headed households in those. And so there really is focus on addressing those, but they won't be part of a combined workforce development plan. But they will be certainly a focus of the city.
So DC is going to eliminate the TANF program altogether?
No. It's just there are time limits. The idea of welfare reform in 1997 is that's when they changed the name. If you recall, it used to be Aid to Families with Dependent Children, and they changed the name to Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. And the intent was that it be temporary. And the district just never imposed those time limits and finally decided, I don't recall exactly when, it was within the last 2 years, and it was a measure that was introduced by then council member Marion Barry. It was surprising to me, but...
It's just a little add-on, but it's relevant. So for the last 3 years, I've been training TANF recipients for workforce financial literacy, and I won't go through the whole litany of things, but not a single one of them has had a disability. Is there a separate track of TANF training for people who might have a disability that I'm aware of? It's all through this thing called CAFS on the university's campus.
No, there isn't.
Okay.
People with disability should be integrated into that.
Okay. All right.
I will also tell you from my experience with other states in terms of welfare reform, an exemption to the time limit is that the person is found to have a disability. And so what you found in many states was that when TANF time limits were imposed, Social Security disability claims rose. So our goal, of course, would be to help all people who are on assistance to move toward independence.
That the cohort that I've had for 3 years, which is probably a couple hundred people.
It could also be that they're not identifying as having a disability, but I mean, many of the people, in fact, most of the people we work with do not have visible disabilities.
Okay.
So I'm going to quickly go over some of the work that's been going on here in terms of changes in this fiscal year, and then I'll switch over to where we are with the goals for our state plan. First of all, one of the significant changes under WIOA, as people know, is pre-employment transition services, where we're required to provide services to students with disabilities.
What was the name of that?
Pre-Employment Transition. Oh, the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, WIOA.
Thank you.
So Pre-Employment Transition Services, which are referred to by Department of Education as PETS, we've made significant progress with other agencies, education agencies, and Department of Employment Services here in the district. We have been coordinating especially well, I would say, with DCPS. DCPS has hired, and we've transferred funds for them to hire 3 additional workforce development coordinators to work in their high schools, or at least we'll transfer those funds by today. And those staff are there to help students in the school identify work experiences, to help with providing career planning, job readiness training, and our counselors are also working in the schools providing monthly workshops on career planning, post-secondary counseling, and job readiness. We also have representatives from the CIL, who the Center for Independent Living, who are providing peer mentoring at our DC public schools, and we're working on expanding that so that they can also provide that peer mentoring in public charter schools. There are two courses in the district. DC Public Schools provides a general exploration course, which includes a work experience, and so we're funding that work experience, which is for about 100 students. They also have the Career Academy, which is new, and that's at Riverview Terrace School, which opened this year. And there are 40 students there who've been placed in work, sort of in paid internships that are associated with whatever their training is. They train in three different areas: horticulture, healthcare, and hospitality. And so they've identified work experiences in those three areas for those 40 students. Hospitality, the three H's. And we have also been working with, we established a contract in the summer with the Special Education Cooperative. They are helping us to establish relationships and to get the same level of support that we now have with DCPS to students who attend the public charter schools. What we need to be working on next is ensuring that students who are attending non-public schools are getting that same level of support. Now, those students, those students have an IEP coordinator who is either from DCPS or the public charter system. And therefore, we should already be covering them, but we will want to have the same kinds of relationships with those schools and figure that out, in part because in some instances, that's where the most significant concern about inclusion in the community is, because they're already in a segregated school setting. And we want to make sure that they're getting experiences in the community before they exit school.
We have a clear sense of the population you're talking about?
Okay. Oh, yeah. We have agreements with the Office of the State Superintendent for Education and DC Public Schools in terms of data sharing so that we know the number of students who are in all the different schools.
Right.
The current population for, it's interesting because it's, the current population, from my recollection, is that for students with disabilities, DC Public Schools is educating, I think, 50% of them. The DC Public Charter School System is educating 37%, and there are 13% in non-public placements.
So when you talk about non-public, you're talking like St. Coletta or those types of schools?
St. Coletta has become a public charter school.
Okay.
But that, but you're right. That's the kind of school we're talking about. Kingsbury, you know, all of the private schools that DC students have opted into because their needs could not be met in the public placements.
But not like Catholic schools or anything like independent schools.
Right. Private, no, we're
schools,
talking
schools,
here.
Private schools, absolutely.
Right. We're talking here exclusively about students who are in special education placements.
The DCPS is placed in special education.
Or the DC public charter system. Because some of them are placed in a non-public placement by a public charter school.
Even if they're
potentially.
What if they're in an institution that's in Maryland?
Same thing. Our counselors are assigned to over 70, the list is on our website, I don't know the exact number, but over 70 schools in the D.C. Baltimore metro area.
Got
so we see students in three schools that I can think of, non-public placements in Baltimore. And as far as past Annapolis, the Harbor School.
Yeah. My son went to the Harbor School, and Nobody showed up until he graduated.
We're trying to fix that.
That's great.
So, yeah, we have our counselors. We have 14 VR counselors in the transition units, and they are assigned 5 or 6 schools each. We've established, and we're actually meeting in a couple weeks with Aussie to determine the extent to which I can really say it's our practice as opposed to our policy. But we've established schedules with each of these schools so that the counselor is there on a regular basis, depending on the level of the referrals from those schools. In most instances, it's once a week, but there are some schools, you know, that Washington Latin, for example, has 2 students this year. So we don't need to be there once a week. But a school like Wilson, who refers 50 students, once a week may not be enough in some instances. So based on the coordination with each school, they establish a calendar.
I have a question for the non-public. Does that include also the residential placements? Or what happens with those? Because I know sometimes those can be a little bit further in the Baltimore area.
No, it doesn't. What happens with the residential placements is 2 things. One, those students, for example, I mean, they're even further from us than Maryland or Virginia. So in many instances, what will occur is that we will attempt to connect those students to Voc Rehab in the state where the residential placement is located, and then we work together to share the case so that they provide services while they're in that state, and that we do the planning to have services in place when they return to the district. We've had meetings with the person at DCPS responsible for this. It's not where it needs to be, but it is on our radar.
Do you have a list of the students who are in non-public placements or in placements, or you just know the schools?
We know the schools because we can't have a list of the students. The students' names can't. We have the numbers and the schools, but the names can't be provided to us until we have the consent, either from the student if they're 18 or older, or the parent. And so we would know that a school has students, but we don't know
who they are.
Right. And based on that information, we assign someone. And the school knows who has an IEP.
So, this question is for you. You don't have to answer now. But if your child didn't get any counseling till the end of his graduation, I'm curious as to what he missed or she missed out on, and what would have been different, or.
And my answer ties into what I was asking is, part of it was my son was at the Harbor School in Annapolis, and they didn't want to deal with D.C., so I'm not blaming D.C. But my friends with children in Maryland or Virginia, the state or their counties provided the parents' information. And so I had no information, and I would talk to my friends to see, well, you know, when you get this age, you should do X, Y, and Z. And that's why I was asking, because nobody told us we needed to apply for anything.
You're actually raising a really good point, which has been raised at, I'm on the Special Education Advisory, or the State Advisory Panel on Special Education at the Office of the State Superintendent for Education. And an issue that has been presented there that we need to deal with is parents there. One of the issues that they are focusing on this year is transition, and parents talking about how we can do more to outreach to parents and what kinds of steps we can take to provide that education to parents, because we are currently relying on the school to provide it, but we need to partner with the school. I don't want to blame anyone. We need to have materials that the schools can include in any mailings they have, because I'm certain they will if we provide appropriate materials for them. And so that is an issue that has been raised, is, and it's a real, I mean, it's a failure in part on my part, not thinking about we're doing all this work with schools, but, and in fact, counselors, you know, counselors have gone to back to school night. my own view is that that's not the way to get the information to parents, because having been a parent at back to school night, you have different interests that night. And so, you know, when someone's there with their brochures, no, you're going, you have 10 minutes for every teacher.
What about like this annual school fair?
So that's what we're looking at, is different things we can do to make sure that we get the word out. And we're actually on our final day tomorrow of interviewing for a transition project manager who will in part be responsible for those kinds of things to do better in our outreach.
Okay. Can I answer? You can get anything.
Got it.
And can
but
I
more
say...
More importantly, I was trying to figure out, what do you think he missed?
Well, let's put it this way. He missed being... getting any services, and when he graduated, I already had gotten him a job, but because, and this was a time, I don't want to start blaming, but RSA wouldn't put him on their list until he graduated, and then he already had a job, and I needed a job counselor for him, and, you know, it was only through lots of last minute things that finding one person who would help. You know, but their thought was, well, after he graduates, we'll get him a job counselor, but then you have a whole summer of waiting for him. You know, and he had a job immediately, and I didn't want him to lose the job or the skills. And I just didn't know what services were available.
And we've made a lot of changes in the last couple of years and still have more to make, but included were, for one, going from 4 transition VR counselors to 14 is helpful. but also, transition vocational rehabilitation services continued to define vocational rehabilitation as an adult service. And so the focus was always on providing services after graduation. We made that change explicitly a couple of years ago, moving toward, and we're still not where I think we need to be, ensuring that we are working with all students their last 2 years before they finish school. And then I'm glad that we started when we did, because with the passage of the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, it's a requirement that we now have to provide a number of different pre-employment transition services to all students with disabilities who are eligible for VR or potentially eligible for VR services. So that includes career planning, counseling on post-secondary options, peer mentoring, opportunities for work experience, and work readiness training. And so we are working to put those services in place. And as I say, those are services that should be provided to all students with disabilities, which is students who have an IEP, students who are eligible for a 504 plan, which is a plan for accommodations in the education system. So any student who has what qualifies as a disability is eligible to receive pre-employment transition services. And we are putting those in place in the schools now and working in partnership with the schools and with some community-based agencies to get those services in place. Another significant change is regarding supported employment. One of the mandates under WIOA is that we work with people with the most barriers, that we ensure, I mean, WIOA moved toward eliminating sheltered workshops. It didn't completely get there. We don't have sheltered workshops in the district. However, we also don't have adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities who are fully integrated into the community. And so our goal is to work toward full integration, including an expectation that for a person with a disability, like for any other person, when you finish your education, you move to employment. I was presenting on a panel with the former DD director from Washington State, who is quite an advocate on this issue, and what she presented was, from her view when she was the director in Washington for a number of years, unless you have a trust fund or are in a coma, you should be able to work, and we should be able to provide the supports for you to be able to work. So we are really working on changing this in the district to help people with disabilities obtain employment and to provide the supports they need to be successful. One of the changes that we've made in RSA is that we have now created, and I'm sure if I look back in history, Marlene will tell me, recreated a sort of supported employment unit where we have five counselors who are assigned to work with people who have been referred to us by either the Developmental Disability Administration here at the Department on Disability Services, or people with serious mental illness or serious emotional disturbance who have been referred by a core service agency with the Department of Behavioral Health. We're seeing a real significant increase in the numbers of people that we're serving in terms of referrals from those agencies, and we're really working on, I think we've made tremendous progress in improving the referral process so that people come to us and then get referred for extended services without gaps. So, because, you know, that's what used to happen, is that there wasn't an effective handoff. And so we've changed our policies and I believe are improving our practices. We meet monthly. We meet twice a month with the managers in DDA, and we meet monthly with the managers and all of the providers with DVH. So I want to just review. Thank you. Some folks spent a fair amount of time here with me looking at our goals and priorities and going through our plans, and then provided some written feedback as well. And so I want to go over what we have come up with in terms of the goals for RSA and the strategies.
Marlene, he didn't have any coffee or donuts, so I didn't understand what that was about.
So I'm going to move back just a little bit so I can reach my... So we have four overarching goals, which are... One of the things we've tried to do is, for one, align our city plan goals. And I looked at VR plans for other states, and the goals are pretty similar from state to state. So first is to increase the number of DC residents with disabilities who achieve quality employment outcomes in competitive integrated settings. I thought I'd change that to high quality because... You know, quality needs a modifier. Improve RSA service delivery through more efficient operations and a more effective and skilled workforce. Expand and improve the quality of transition services through improved coordination with the State Education Agency and all local education agencies, and implementation of pre-employment transition services to secondary students with disabilities. And lastly, improve coordination with other workforce development agencies providing services at the American Job Centers. So, under goal one, we have 8 objectives, which I will quickly review with people, along with, you know, strategies under each objective. So the first objective, oh. Oh, okay. I was on page two, I was wondering why that was the first objective. So the first objective is to increase our outreach with a focus on underserved populations that were identified in our 2014 plan, or I'm sorry, our 2014 needs assessment, which was published in December 2014. And for people who wish, it's available online. And it's, if you go to the DDS page, it's on the first page. So the strategies include implementing targeted recruitment for Spanish-speaking vocational rehabilitation counselors, expanding the presence of VR counselors in the American job centers, ensuring that our intake appointments are offered either here at our office or at one of the AJCs located in the community closer to the person's home, identify additional outreach sites in Wards 7 and 8, and identify outreach sites in community-based organizations that serve immigrants from Asia, Pacific Islands, Ethiopia and Eritrea, and Latin America, as well as people with spinal cord injuries and other traumatic physical disabilities.
Andy, excuse me, before you, do you have a copy, like a copy for all of us as we read it through, we can read along with you of the details?
I have this, the details I could send to you. But.
Okay.
That we'll have, so objective two is to increase outreach to people with HIV. And so in support of, this is in support of the mayor's initiative to reduce HIV infections and improve outcomes for people with HIV in the district. So we're going to expand our outreach to include at least two agencies in the district that serve, that provide services to people with HIV/AIDS. We'll provide benefits counseling at those locations. And we'll work on tracking to ensure that we are tracking the number of people that we're serving. Number three is to increase the effectiveness of our outreach efforts through ongoing evaluation and of the utilization of the outreach sites. While we have increased the number of sites, we're currently in 30, what we want to do is make sure that we're tracking the utilization at each of those sites and make sure that it's not just a quiet day for a counselor out in the community. And in instances where we're not seeing a lot of traffic in a particular site, we'll work with the staff at that site to determine what that's about, not just automatically assume that that site is not working. And what that will include is having supervisors assigned to different wards in the city, so that supervisors will each be responsible for tracking particular sites. Fourth,
I do have a question.
Yeah.
Before we go on, when you mention site, is that a government or a private site?
Everything. So it's the American Job Centers, which are government. It's the Ethiopian Community Center, Unity Healthcare. As I said, there are 30 sites currently. Increase the number of people who complete training programs that prepare them for jobs in high-demand fields, increasing the number of employment placements in those fields. One of the focuses in WIOA is that our services should be, that we should be providing job, like demand-driven services, that counselors should be working with a person when they apply for services to talk about the availability of jobs in whatever area interests them, and in the area in which they have an, you know, interest, ability, skills, that part of that conversation should also be, and opportunities for employment, so that you're having a realistic conversation about the outcome. Now, for the workforce development system at DOES, their eligible training providers are exclusively in the five high-demand areas, which in the district are hospitality, IT, construction, security, and healthcare. Now, our services are individualized so that if a person's interest is outside those areas, we would, of course, support them. But part of developing a plan with a person is looking at employment outcomes in the end. And at our last WIC meeting, there was someone who spoke in the public comment period to question the WIC about the fact that commercial driver or, you know, something along those lines is not in the list, because in fact we see a lot of outcomes in that area and there is higher demand, but he said it may not be captured in the data because the companies are not necessarily located in the district. So a person can work for a company far away but do trucking, and there are lots of up. So it's not so limited to just be those five areas, but there should be focus on those areas because that's where the jobs are.
So is cybersecurity in IT or in security or both?
It's both.
Okay.
And then increase the number of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and with serious mental illness or serious emotional disturbance who achieve competitive integrated employment. So as I said earlier, we have already made changes. We have this unit identified, and we are really working on improving our referral process. We actually expect to see we've seen almost doubling of the number of service providers for evidence-based supported employment, which is what's provided to people with serious mental illness. It's an evidence-based model.
What does that mean?
It's from Dartmouth University, where they did the research. It's actually got another name now. But what they looked at was whether people would benefit from rapid placement. It's actually rapid engagement. So they engage the person. They don't put preconditions on beginning to work with them. The idea is that employment is an organizing factor in a person's life, and that you don't put preconditions of compliance with medication or treatment for substance abuse before accepting the case, and you begin working with the person with the idea that having structure in their lives will improve compliance with treatment. And their research backs that up. So that model is employed by 10 agencies here in the district. And really, to get more, you could get more information from the folks at DBH who are the experts, or from my staff who know about it. But number six is increasing the agency's capacity in serving people who are blind and visually impaired. And so, you know, this is one of the things that was identified in our needs assessment, is doing some work in terms of expanding the number of providers that we have, doing better outreach, ensuring that we're providing services. And even though this isn't here, this is an issue not only because this is just our VR plan. This is an issue not just for vocational rehabilitation, but also independent living and the program that works with older people, which is a very broad definition, so people know, because it starts at 55. Older individuals who are blind. We have a fairly small grant to provide services to this population. Seventh is increasing the range of employment outcomes, and this is a recommendation also from our needs assessment. Marlene will talk a bit about the employment outcomes from last year. One of the things that we have seen is something like 30% of the placements that we have are in custodial positions, and we had some very good conversations with our providers about steps that we could take to improve outcomes in that area. One of the reasons for that is that one of the things people need when they come to us is basic resources, and those are jobs that pay well. And so what we need to be making sure that we're doing, and this is something that there's the Career Pathways Task Force of the Workforce Innovation, Workforce Investment Council, that is looking at the career path, creating the career pathways system in the city, so that we're not just looking at putting someone in a job or looking at the first job, but helping people actually establish a career. And so that custodial job may be fine initially. What's the goal? And so figuring out how we work with people over the long term to have other entry ramps to allow them to return for services to advance in employment. And last is developing additional outreach materials. So we've done a lot in that area, but we will work on what we're doing is revising them as appropriate. We need to look at all of our materials in terms of whether there are changes that are necessitated by WIOA. And we're also just, you know, we developed a lot of materials a year ago, so we've had people helping us to look at the effectiveness of what we have and what changes could be made to make them more effective. And we'll be making those changes over the next year.
Andy, just a quick question. Over the years, what do you think is the most, how do people mostly hear about RSA services? Out of all the outreach materials, the brochures and everything, how do they really get to know about the services you provide?
If I answered, I'd be guessing. So
okay.
I don't know if...
Well, when we do the survey, that is a question on our survey, is use the friend and family.
Okay.
And then so many, we have, quite frankly, so many people who have received services before.
Okay.
And they're returning.
Okay.
So of the outreach materials that you did develop, you said they need changes, but are they available widely as they are? Or?
Yes,
okay.
I believe so. They should be.
They might be.
Our second goal was to improve the efficiency and improve RSA service delivery through more efficient operations and a more effective and skilled workforce. And we have three objectives under that. The first is obviously our biggest because it's all about employment. So improving our effectiveness is we have a very robust, I would say, training program for our staff, particularly for our VR counselors. Up until October of 2014, we had the Technical Assistance and Continuing Education Center at George Washington University that was funded through the Department of Education that provided training for the VR agencies in our whole region. That funding was eliminated. And so beginning once that funding was eliminated, we established an agreement. We put out a solicitation and were able to establish an agreement then with GW, and they provide monthly continuing education for our counselors and other staff that work with people here at the agency.
You're basically paying for what the feds were paying for.
That's it.
Andy, who are you working with for that?
Maureen.
Okay.
Who used to attend these meetings as a member of the TACE, but there is no more TACE, which is Technical Assistance and Continuing Education. The way that the feds now do technical assistance is that they have centers that specialize in particular areas. So there is a transition technical assistance center. There's there's the one on workforce that's in Boston. And so they're doing these sort of specialized centers that are supposed to be available to the whole country, and we'll see how well that system works. The second objective is to retain, train, and recruit experienced, qualified VR staff and service providers to improve services to low-incidence populations, which are identified here as people who are blind, deaf-blind, or have autism or autism spectrum disorders, and should probably also say TBI. Autism is still considered low incidence, in case that was the expression, Whether you call it low incidence or not, the need for additional services is acute. I think one of the significant challenges is that for many students with autism, they are on a diploma track, and so they are doing everything they can to get through high school. They don't have availability in their schedule or the opportunity for the kinds of independent living and, you know, other life skills courses that they need. So they graduate with a high school diploma and with very few independent living skills. And so figuring out how we improve our services, particularly to this population of students who work very hard to make it through high school and get the diploma, but then are ill-prepared to live independently in the world, which is what's required to be able to go to work. And, you know, it's a challenge, too, because the district is, as a student with a disability, they're entitled to education until age 21. But as soon as that diploma is issued, the entitlement ends. And there is pressure from the Department of Education because states are evaluated based on the percentage of students with disabilities who graduate within 4 years. And many students would benefit from figuring out a way to allow them to add a year to that. But that's a very difficult undertaking. Students don't want to, you know, they know what delayed means, like in terms of, you know, being held back a year, and so they want to graduate with their class. And figuring out ways to address this is also something I'm, in my other role on the State Advisory Panel on Special Education, something I raise frequently. The other is just making sure that we have, in terms of the services and supports for people who are blind, and the deafblind community is one that is growing in the district. Second is revising VR policies and procedures to ensure that they're current with WIOA requirements. Now, the WIOA regulations are still proposed regulations, and we will not see final regulations, we are told, until the spring of 2016. So by my definition, that means June 20th, because that's the last day of spring. But we'll see if they make that deadline.
So young, so cynical.
Our third goal relates to transition services. First, to update our memorandum of agreement with the Office of the State Superintendent for Education to make sure that we have everything in place that we need to coordinate services for students who are in school. And we've actually, I think, been working very well. The Office of the State Superintendent met with directors of all the public charter schools, provided them with a template that we had provided of an agreement between us and each local education agency, and said it was their expectation that they would work with us on establishing agreements. So we've had their support. They also had a planning meeting between all of our VR staff and the special education staff at each public charter school, so they could introduce each other before the school year started, get their schedules coordinated. So OSSE has been helpful with us. We just need to finalize the agreement that spells out all those things they're doing. We will provide work opportunities for work experience for students with disabilities, which I outlined before. There's a number of things, including much better coordination with Department of Employment Services in terms of making summer youth employment not only available, but ensuring that supports are there to ensure that students with disabilities can be successful in those placements.
Hey, is there a timeline of fully executing the MOAs with the public charter schools?
For this year in our city plan, it is that we'll have, I think, 8 of them done.
Okay.
There are 22 public charter schools that work with, that are in the secondary system, and there are an additional 9 schools that are in the adult system, but We expect by the end of program year 2016-17 that we will have executed all of them with each of the public charter schools.
Excellent.
The third is to provide PETS services to students with disabilities. And as I said, we're working now with, especially working well with DC public schools. We're working on getting up, ramping things up with the public charter schools to ensure that those five services I named are available to all students with disabilities. And this is regardless of whether the student is a client at RSA or not. And so, and the benefit of that is what we had happen last summer is that we would get a call from DOES, second day of SYEP, or the second week of the summer youth employment program. I don't put little parentheses after I say it the first time. I should make assumptions. So we would get calls after a day or a week saying we have this student who's in a placement who needs support. And fortunately, because paid work experiences or work-based learning experiences is a service available to any student potentially eligible, if the person is currently a student in school, then we could provide those services immediately. We did not have to go through eligibility or establishing an IPE. We just put the service in place. And we're quite successful in the couple of instances where they called us and said, can you provide someone tomorrow? And we had some agencies that worked with us and did a stellar job supporting students in the summer. It was a very good experience, and we hope to see it expanded this summer.
And I think there was a question from Maria.
No es pregunta, pero me gustaría que si por favor puede hablar un poquito más despacio, porque yo estoy perdiendo mucho información en la interpretación.
It's not a question, but I'm wishing you could please speak a little bit slower because I'm losing a lot of information with the interpretation.
Oh, okay. I'll try and keep focused on them so that when they advise me that I slow down. And so our fourth goal of improving our coordination at the American Job Centers. This is a requirement under the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. You know, there is a real expectation that we, frankly, establish a workforce system in the district. What we have currently are a number of individual agreements between different agencies that provide workforce services, but not a clear, comprehensive system where someone can walk into one place and have access to all the services that they need to move from being a job seeker to being employed, and that they don't get directed from one agency to another. I mean, sometimes even from one program to another.
So the question I was going to ask had to do with something we get all tied up in the business world with all these end-to-end processes, right? You're starting somewhere, you're trying to get somewhere, but along the way you map out the things. That it does exist, right? And it exists so everybody can compare their end-to-ends. Yes?
No.
It's
what we're required to do.
I'm sorry. You had me going there for a while.
No. And part of what we are really working on is making the American Job Centers exactly that.
Okay.
And one part of it will be a data sharing agreement, objective 4.1, between these agencies.
Mm-hmm.
The Office of the State Superintendent for Education has what's called the Data Vault. And once we are all in that, we will have access to not full information about people,
right,
but we will have access to who has been engaged with which agencies and what training they have completed. And so what we've been doing is working on a unified intake between the four AJC partners,
mm-hmm,
which is DOES, Department of Employment Services, the Office of the State Superintendent for Education, the Department of Human Services, and RSA, so that we identified which are the common factors we all collect at intake and be able to share that information so that people don't have to do it over and over again and be able to identify training that people have completed. I mean, we're working on it. We're not there yet, but that is the goal. And so the first part is that we need these data sharing agreements, and frankly, they need to be in place by July 1, not only to better serve people, but we're required to track things under WIOA, and in order to track them, we need to have access to education and employment data. We will need to be tracking information about people after we have closed their case, and that's new for us. And so we need data that DOE, Department of Employment Services, has access to.
So that's a WIOA rule that you start tracking in July 1?
That's correct.
The rules that haven't been finalized till the spring.
Well, here's the thing. It's. You're right.
Yeah, okay, fine. Okay. I just want to make sure.
But those rules apply to that law. And the law was passed in July 2014.
I got it. Okay.
So the law is there, and we know you what we're going to track.
I thought we lost it, in effect.
Excuse me?
You said you started in June, but I thought it already started way before then.
The Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, as to Title IV for VR services under the law, became immediately effective when signed by the President on July 22, 2014. It became effective for Department of Employment Services and the adult education programs on July 1, 2015. The first year of our state plan begins July 1, 2016, and that is the date on which we have to start tracking our new performance indicators that have been established under WIOA, which require us to track not just who got employment, but who maintained employment for 2 and 4 quarters after closing their case, wages of people 2 and 4 quarters after closing, measurable gains in education. And so those performance standards go into effect July 1, 2016. What the standard is, we're not clear about yet.
Right.
We know what the standard is. We don't know what the goal is.
Do you have a good tracking system in place?
No.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Actually, let me answer that a little more fully.
Not yet. Is there
a good tracking
not
system?
Yet.
Yes. The only issue is that we need to get access to that tracking system so that there is, I would tell you what this stands for, but I don't know, the RIS, W-R-I-S, if anyone knows, tell me. So this is employment data from across the country, which DOES has access to. We need to have access to that because we have people whose case closes.
The wage record interchange system.
There you go. Thank you. So we have people whose cases close unsuccessfully because we've lost track of them. The reason we've lost track is that they've finished with us, they've gotten a job, and they've moved on. We close them as unsuccessful. In this new system, if we're tracking correctly, they will actually reflect positively because we'll have better wage data. We currently rely on wage reports from the person while their case is open. In the future, we will need to rely on wage information from this tracking system.
So basically, you'd be querying this whatever system this is to identify the status, the successes of RSA versus RSA doing the individual tracking post-closure.
That is correct.
Okay.
Except that we will get the data, but we will not get the data tied to specific individuals.
Okay.
This is from this big data vault you've been talking
no.
about.
No, the well, data separate. The data vault
separate. Okay.
provides us information about measurable gains in training programs.
Okay.
And then OSSE has the Office of the State Superintendent for Education has a separate system that tracks people's progress in post-secondary institutions. Okay. So are the systems there? Yes. Do we yet have access? No. Will we have by July 1?
They're working
yes.
on
Jazz.
Optimistically stated.
I'm curious, how do you track success for RSA for the students that you're providing PETs to that may not necessarily be RSA clients? Or are you tracking success at all?
What we're tracking for them is services provided.
Okay.
And we're tracking it by student ID number.
And that's all you're required to track with them?
We don't know.
Okay.
Yes.
Coming soon.
Because there's a lot of things that's just haven't worked out
yet. I wonder, since you know the new requirements are coming out, what that's going to look like long term and how PETS is going to play out for students. Is it going to be meaningful? And what does that look like?
A really good question that someone asked was, do you have evidence-based practices that you're providing? And the reality is, from the research that I have seen, what we know about transition is that students who have two paid work experiences prior to graduation have a much higher success rate in obtaining employment after graduation. I don't know beyond that about good research that would support any of the other services that we provide. So I think that there is the opportunity, as they're requiring all the states to provide these services, to get in and do some research to come up with evidence-based practices to see what results in better outcomes. Right now, we're just tracking services provided. So in terms of coordination, the other is the American Job Center is required to serve dual customers, both job seekers and businesses. We have an extremely disjointed system in the district for outreach to businesses. We have at least 11 different agencies that have staff who contact businesses looking for job opportunities. That's just public agencies. That's not counting the number that each of us contracts with. The number one complaint we hear from businesses is, I don't need 15 people calling me asking me about jobs. And so part of what we are trying to do is to establish better coordination amongst the agencies about business opportunities that exist. Other issues that I want to make sure you're aware of in the plan, the order of selection refers to the need to impose a waiting list for services when there are not sufficient resources to serve all people who are eligible. We have had an order of selection in place since October 1, 2014. We will retain that, and we have maintained all categories. The category of service is determined by the severity of the disability. We have three categories of service. Category one being most significantly disabled, and not significantly disabled. And these categories relate to the extent to which the disability creates the extent to which it impacts a person's ability to work and the functional capacity of a person, how that is impacted by the disability. And so for people who require more services in order to engage in work, they're most significantly all the way down. And we have the order of selection in the system to be available to use. Romeo's going to talk about the budget, and you'll see we in 2015 and 2014, we made it through each of those years relying on what are called reapportionment funds. The beginning of the fourth quarter of the year states the Vocational Rehabilitation Services are a federal local program.
The federal government pays about 80%, the state pays 20%. Those states that cannot meet their match have to return federal funds when the fourth quarter begins. Those states that are overmatched, which includes the district, are able to then draw down additional federal funds. Last year, we drew down $3.5 million. The year before, I think it was $4 million. And, you know, we needed those funds to get through the whole year. We can't plan our budget around getting those funds. And so the real possibility that we could end up with a waiting list continues to loom. We have gotten an additional $1.75 million in local funds this fiscal year. So I just wanted to make people aware of that. Now, there are two exceptions, which are WIOA related to this waiting list. One is pre-employment transition services to students with disabilities are services provided to people who are potentially eligible. And therefore, we would provide those services regardless of whether there's a waiting list. We are required to reserve 15% of our VR budget. Our grant currently is about $14 million per year, so 15% is a little over $2 million. We're required to reserve those funds and expend them on that service, and that requirement continues regardless of the imposition of a waiting list. The other exception is that WIOA allows there to be an exception for the provision of services or equipment for a person who requires it to maintain employment. And it would be exclusively for that, so that if a person acquires a disability or equipment they have malfunctions and they require new equipment, they could, and they need that in order to maintain their job, we could provide that. The person would not be generally eligible for a VR case, but they would be eligible for that equipment.
Andy, you said that the last 2 years you got RSA was overmatched, so you had to withdraw. You had to draw down for the from the reapportionment money. Is that correct?
Not had to draw down. We were able to.
Oh, you were able to.
Yes.
Okay, because I was wondering whether or not, like, you know, what caused the the shortage that required you to, you know, to draw down on the funding. So is it like the budgeting challenges of
college students?
I'm sorry. Hmm?
It's called college students.
Okay.
So if you take a look at their budget, a lot of their expenditures are from college students attending school in the area or outside. And so it's getting really sticky in terms of will the agency be able to continue supporting all the college students with disabilities that come through the agency. And so, and if the order sets in, then there comes that question of how many college students will continue receiving the services if the order sets in. It doesn't look good if the order sets in, and that means there's going to be a tremendous limited number of college students receiving support, because the way that the order operates is that the citizens with the most significant disabilities get the service first.
Which includes a number of college students.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't think we should necessarily say that most significantly disabled students can't go to college.
True.
And also the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act specifically talks about fields of employment that require college degrees and advancing people's employment.
Well, and it added as a purpose of vocational rehabilitation to advance in employment. And so we talk to people about the fact that we're also here after this job for you to come back when you wish to advance in employment. In many respects, I see the fact that we have had to draw these funds down as a success.
Yeah.
In that we're serving more people. I mean, Romeo is going to provide an overview of the budget so that you can see the services where that's being spent. We're fully staffed, just about. We have currently 5 vacancies out of 114, which is, we're within 2% this quarter of our personnel budget, so that's pretty close. And so, you know, I think it's good, but I think that it really requires us to look closely to make sure that we're using our funds efficiently to ensure we can continue to provide.
Plus, it's quite helpful that the current mayor and the previous mayors have been very supportive of supporting the match as well. So that's really helpful that DC in general has been very supportive of the disability community in terms of employment outcomes.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure, like, I know the budget has already been submitted, but, like, proper, like, projection planning, right? So understanding that now there's going to be a significant increase of transitional youth. We know that college students is another, another area where there's always, where there seems to be a trend of continuing increasing. So when it's time to come to, to do the budget, all those considerations are taken into account for planning purposes so that, things tend to be kind of like managed and you don't have to kind of refer to reapportion funding or anything else. It's already planned out, it's already anticipated, it's already planned for.
Well, the reality is we required those funds to make it through. So, I don't see having to rely on them as a problem. I think that long-term good economic health in other states that will allow them to meet their match could be our challenge. And just in that regard, in terms of, I don't want to jump ahead because I want to take a break before we move on to those the two reports from Marlene and Romeo. In terms of expenditures for college students, in 2015, they went down slightly, the cost of college, and the number of students went up by 100. And it went up by about 27%. And part of that, I think, is related to the change in our regulations last year, which changed how we pay for out-of-state schools when there is a local option available to a person. And so we have, in terms of the efficiency, saved a great deal of money. I mean, if that's 100 more students were served, and we spent 3.6 something as opposed to $3.8 million. 3.7 million as opposed to 3.8 million. In terms of the unified plan, I've already said most of this. As I said, the final plan will be submitted on March 3rd. I will have our part available on the Google Docs for everyone by Monday. And as I said, that's already been submitted, but any comments you have, please make sure and make them once it's published by the Workforce Investment Council so that your comments are going. I mean, if you send them to me, I'll forward them. But so actually, this is a good place, since they're working on equipment, for us to take a quick break before we move on, in part because these things have to be divided up.